Welcome everybody to our memorial meeting this morning. We will start with the singing of hymn 51. God is love, his mercy brightens all the path in which we rove. Though the darkness sometimes frightens, God is wisdom, God is love. Hymn 51. We will now sing hymn 288. Loving shepherd of thy sheep, keep thy lambs in safety keep. Nothing can thy power withstand, none can pluck them from thine hand. Hymn 288. I'll now hand over to Scott to give us those necessary words of exhortation.
Good morning, dear brothers and sisters. Firstly, I must begin by confessing that I wrote this exhortation after some people at work started coming around asking for money to put towards their lottery scheme that they run around the office. Everyone puts in a little bit of money and they buy lottery tickets and yeah, anyway, I told them that I wasn't going to be partaking in that, and that sort of led me down a bit of a research rabbit hole, looking at all sorts of studies to do with money and fame and all that sort of thing. So apologies if this exhortation is quite statistical in nature. Recently, NetBase carried out a survey of over 2,000 men and women to see what we really desire in life. 70% of people replied, money. So why are we so obsessed with money and wealth, desperate to have it all? An adjoining study showed that 51% of high school students said that becoming famous was their aspiration in life. More than half. We, as a culture, are obsessed with money and fame. We have celebrities in our home every day through the TV or radio. Half the pages of the newspaper today or magazines today are full of it, aren't they? And in today's world of social media, our vanity and obsession with self-image is at an all-time high. Everyone in today's world is desperate to be noticed, because they think that this will make them happy. We see these celebrities in their fancy new cars or their big houses, and we think, maybe if we had what they had, we'd be happy. Maybe if we had the money that they had, things would be so much easier. When asked the question, if you could swap lives with anyone that you wanted, would you do it? 80% of people said that they would. Most people chose celebrities like Brad Pitt or Beyonce, even Prince Harry got a mention. So given the opportunity, it seems that most people would opt for this money or fame. They assume that it will bring them happiness. But when asked a similar question with a slight difference, this time being you can swap with someone else, but you don't get to pick who it is. You swap randomly with one of the other 7 billion people around this world. Would you do it? Well, practically no one said yes, for fear that they might swap with some poor African villager. So, one positive note that I suppose we could draw from that is maybe our lives aren't that bad after all. On a more negative note, it does appear to confirm my first stat. We are obsessed with money. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 4 through to 10 say, they are conceited and understand nothing. They have an unhealthy interest in controversies and quarrels about words that result in envy, strife, malicious talk, evil suspicions, and constant friction between people of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. We've been aware since Paul's time that chasing wealth and material possessions is a bad idea. And yet, 32 million people in the UK alone play the lottery every single week. A third of the whole country. Despite the odds of winning the lottery being just 1 in 14 million here in the UK, these 32 million people play along every single week, buying an average of 3 tickets per person and spending a massive £192 million every single week on the lottery. Imagine if that money could be used in a slightly better way. But no, that's how we are. We want our money, we want to live like celebrities, so instead we buy these little tickets every week in hopes that we'll get lucky and get that money and the lifestyle that we've always wanted. So why is it that we're always desperate for more? Desperate to have that next big thing. Get the new phone. Got to get the new car. The new big house. We want this. We want that. And we always want something bigger and better. Well, it's because we're programmed to believe that these things will make us happy. It's shoved down our throats by every type of media that to be cool or to be happy, you need to have all this stuff. Because all these peoples who are idols in our society today, the rich and the famous, they have these things, don't they? They might be standing there in the ad telling us to buy one. The sad thing is that the majority of lottery players aren't very well off at all. The £2 tickets, or however much they are, might seem insignificant to the multi-million pound payouts that are on offer. Yet the average lottery player spends between 300 and 400 quid a year on just these little bits of paper. What these players don't realise is that even if they do win, they are not by any means guaranteed to be happy. In fact, more often than not, the opposite is true. According to a 2015 study, 44% of those who have ever won large lottery prizes were broke within 5 years, with a further 21% of these people becoming broke within 10 years. 65% of all lottery winners who have ever won a large payout are broke within 10 years. Other studies show that lottery winners frequently become estranged from family and friends and incur a greater incidence of depression, drug and alcohol abuse, and a fourfold increased rate of divorce. This also along with a higher than average suicide rate. Most of the winners become unhappy and broke because people aren't prepared for all the pressure that comes with that money or with fame, like the pressure that is on celebrities in today's world. Social media makes it impossible for anyone to stay anonymous. For a lottery winner, for a famous person, you are no longer anonymous if you are on social media. And if you are lucky enough to be famous or to come into a large amount of money, then the guilt trips and manipulation start very quickly. Whether that be in the form of letters from a beggar who you've never met before, or the desperate financial problems of an acquaintance who you haven't seen in 10 years. You quickly become everybody's best friend, but clearly for all the wrong reasons. So let's take a little look at an example now. There are many rags-to-riches stories that end in ruins, and this is just one of them. William Bud Post struggled through life doing odd jobs to survive, including truck driving, painting pipelines, and cooking food for refreshment stands at circuses and carnivals. Despite his fairly cookie-cutter life, I suppose you could say, he was a happy man. He had a long-term girlfriend, lots of friends, he was close to his family. At age 48 in 1988, Post asked his then-girlfriend to pick up some lottery tickets for him whilst out shopping, claiming that he would give her some of the profits if he won. She picked up the tickets, and he consequently won in what was at the time the highest jackpot in the state. He ended up with $16.2 million. This money was to be paid to him at the rate of just under $500,000 per year for the next 26 years, which is often what happens over in America with lottery winnings. You aren't just given one big lump sum that you can take to the casino and stick all on red. You're put on a payment plan so that you might be able to somehow deal with this massive influx of money. So $500,000 a year he was meant to be getting for the next 26 years. And although Post, like all or almost all lottery winners, started out with good intentions, plans of saving, within the first 2 weeks after he'd collected his initial payment, he'd spent over $300,000 on gifts and investments, such as buying himself a liquor license and building a bar in his cellar to serve his friends, buying a lease for a restaurant for his older brother, a used car lot for his younger brother, and of course, what all of us need in life, a twin-engine aeroplane. Not that he could fly, he just liked the idea of owning a plane. Why not, I suppose? After 3 months, he'd already spent $1 million. So that's the first year's payment gone, just like that, and he's now $500,000 in debt. The next year, Post got his next installment and cleared his debts. Then he borrowed some more money and bought himself a mansion in Pennsylvania. This was for $395,000. and he planned to renovate it. His brothers, in the meantime, who he'd already bought a restaurant and a used car lot, as I just mentioned, started to become jealous of the lavish lifestyle that Post was living, jealous of the fame that he had accrued for himself in the small town in which he lived. So they hired a hitman to kill him, to kill their own brother, so that they might be able to claim some of his inheritance. However, luckily for Post, the attempt failed and the plot was uncovered. But the trouble continued still. His former girlfriend, who we mentioned earlier, who purchased the tickets for him, sued him for a breach of a verbal contract because he had agreed to share part of the winnings with her. She won the decision and was awarded a third of all his winnings. Post refused to pay. His assets were frozen until an agreement could be reached. So after this loss and already mounting debt due to him spending money that he'd not yet even been given, Post decided to recoup some of his wealth by selling off some of his possessions and auctioning off the remaining lottery payments that he was due. He couldn't wait for the installments anymore. He needed all the money that he could get. A man who used to live on $200 a week doing odd jobs now could not survive on $500,000 a year. And isn't that just typical of human nature? So, obviously, being paid in these installments was too long to wait. He needed what he could immediately. So in 1996, he sold off his mansion for just $65,000, which is less than a quarter of what he bought it for. And then he auctioned off his last 17 lottery payments that were worth around $8.5 million if he had have just been patient enough to get them $500,000 at a time. But no, he auctioned them off, and obviously his house and a lot of his possessions, for just $2.6 million. But you might think, that sounds right. He's got $2.6 million in the bank of the original 16.2. Maybe he'll realize how silly he was originally. Maybe he'll finally learn that he needs to start saving. Time to settle down and be a bit more responsible. 1 year on, and all of that money is gone. Post splurged on two new homes, another truck, three cars, two Harley Davidson motorcycles, two 62-inch Sony TVs, a luxury camper van, computers, and a $260,000 sailboat. The debt collectors soon began arriving, and on one occasion, suffering from depression and living alone in his mansion, Post fired a shotgun in their direction to scare them off. In 1998, he was arrested on his boat after he'd refused to serve a prison sentence for the alleged shooting incident. Once the sentence was served, it was reported that penniless Bud Post was found living on a $450 per month disability check. So now he's on a $450 per month disability check, and that's all he's living on. Although he survived on this for a while, he was soon again in debt and in trouble with the law. He ended up back in prison. He was left completely broke, didn't have a house, didn't have a job, nothing. When he died in 2006, Post had been living off food stamps and had incurred over $1 million in debt. Having more money can sound great. It might be a bit of a problem solver. It might hold off the debts that you have to pay for a little while. But it can also bring along with it a slew of problems. With family and friends all desperate for a piece of your wealth, you begin to question whether or not these people actually care about you at all. Maybe they're only there for the money. This man's financial situation only served to make him a meal ticket for those that he cared about, including his girlfriend and his brothers. When greed caused those relationships to fall apart, his brothers tried to kill him, and his girlfriend took him to court. No wonder financial planners often joke that if you have an enemy, you should buy them a lottery ticket. So if great amounts of wealth and money won't make us happy, then what will? Well, remember earlier when I said that people wouldn't want to randomly swap lives in case they accidentally swapped with some poor African villager. Well, the funny thing is, we've got brothers and sisters over in Africa. And the funny thing that I notice about almost everyone who goes out there, they always come back commenting on how happy these people are. It's the same in Jamaica as well. I remember when we went out there, we see people living in relative poverty. They have nothing but a little shack that they've built themselves out of some bamboo that they've scavenged and a bit of tin for a roof. And yet these people are happy, happier than a lot of us. They're often the happiest in the world because they don't think about life in the way that we do. They don't tend to be so focused on material things. They don't care about who has the new phone or when they're going to get their next car. They're just grateful that they have enough food and drink to scrape by. But what might be even more telling than that is the percentage of people who are God-fearing in these countries. Johnny Goodwin from Hemel, he would always tell us that in Jamaica, there's never a problem getting people to accept that there's a God. Everyone believes in a God. It's just which one. What church do you go to on a Sunday? That's a more appropriate question to ask because they all believe in a God. They all believe in creation. It is so obvious when looking at examples like that how quickly money and power corrupt. We're given the perfect example of this in our Bibles, aren't we? King Solomon had everything that you could ever imagine and a whole lot more. He was the son of King David by Bathsheba, so of course he was born into enormous wealth and obviously fame, being the king's son. And he started out okay, didn't he? God was very pleased with him, and he was in fact offered a gift by God, and Solomon chose wisdom. What an amazing choice. He chose the one thing that he thought would make him a king fit to rule God's people. Of course, God was very pleased with this selfless decision. We read in 1 Kings chapter 4, verses 29 through to 34, that God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the people of the East, and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than anyone else. He spoke 3,000 proverbs and his songs numbered 1,005. He spoke about plant life, from the cedars of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of walls. He also spoke about animals and birds, reptiles and fish. From all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his great wisdom. So here's a man who seemingly had it all. But despite all the wisdom in the world, he turned his heart from God to chase after pleasure, didn't he? He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Basically, any woman that he saw and desired, he took. Which, for a lot of men in this world today, that would be their absolute ideal. That would be the best thing that they could possibly have, but that didn't make him happy. He thought that his own wisdom and knowledge could make him happy. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 16 to 18, read like this. I said to myself, look, I've increased in wisdom more than anyone who's ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. He thought that the pleasures of the world could satisfy him. I'm going to read now from Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 to 11. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing that my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all of my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. He thought that wealth could content him. But he tells us in Ecclesiastes 5 verse 10 that whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. Solomon had immeasurable wealth, more than possibly anyone else will ever have. Yet it didn't bring him joy. It gained him nothing under the sun. In essence, Solomon's saying to us, I've done it all, and there's only one thing that's constant in life. There's only one thing that you can depend upon, and one thing that will last. One thing that will actually give you hope. He concluded in the end that all the world could offer was mere vanity, and it could not satisfy a man. Our sin nature is always longing for the greener grass, the bigger and better. But it's part of the curse, isn't it, brothers and sisters? We can never truly be satisfied by this life. Of course we can't. If there wasn't trouble now, we would never strive to get something more. We wouldn't bother looking for God. And Solomon, who had it all and tried it all, tells us exactly that. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 to 14 read, "Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil." And aren't we so blessed to know this, brothers and sisters? How many people around this world are lucky enough to have that knowledge, to have found God, to have found and to know the truth, to know that there's a purpose, there's a plan, to know that there's actually a hope of something more, to know that we don't have to live that cookie-cutter life. We don't have to just be inside a box where we go to work every day and the best we can hope for is a wife and kids and a family and some money to leave them. There is so much more than that out there, and so few of us know it. We, brothers and sisters, have won the lottery. We are some of the very few people that God has called out from this world. We are part of the 20% who would not swap our lives for anyone else, because we have something that's actually incredibly rare. We have a gift that's worth more than anything else or anything that this world could provide. And we must cherish it. We know that nothing in this world is better than what we have been given by God. Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through to 21 read, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus has given his life for us to have this hope. We have been hand-picked to know what we know. And what an incredible blessing that is. We talked about the small price that you pay for a huge payout on the lottery. I think we've been asked for not a lot in comparison to what's on offer for us. Eternal life in paradise, in the kingdom. We have won the lottery. Are we going to be part of the 65% who go broke within 10 years? Or are we going to put it to good use? That's down to us.
After the supper, they sang a hymn, and we will do likewise with the hymn 256. By Christ redeemed, in Christ restored, we keep the memory adored, and show the death of our dear Lord until he come. Hymn 256. Hymn 125. Jesus shall reign wherever the sun doth his successive journeys run. His kingdom stretch from shore to shore, till sin shall curse the earth no more. Hymn 125.